I'm Jody Weitz, results and success coach, and these podcasts teach you how to make significant changes to live your dreams, make a positive impact on the world, and drop your regrets. It's time for you to get spectacular. Welcome back to Your Spectacular Life. I'm Jody Weitz, your professional and life coach, making sure that both of those areas are nothing less than spectacular. I'm here with Angela Burke. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Jody. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. This is going to be fun. All right, let me tell you something about Angela. From career reinvention to navigating three waves of menopause, including rage and a host of wild symptoms, Angela Burke holds nothing back, and her brutally honest, deeply passionate book, Real Girl's Guide to Midlife. After divorcing at 45 with three young sons, she torched the script she'd been following for decades and rebuilt her life from scratch, complete with a long-distance love, a blended family of seven kids, and hard-won wisdom about sagging knees, disappearing eyebrows, and the fierce confidence that only comes at midlife. Angela's book is the antidote to every glossy, sanitized narrative ever written about aging gracefully. This isn't a guide to getting it right. It's a companion for getting real. A manifesto for women who are tired of shrinking, settling, and waiting for permission to live boldly. Wow, do we super need this at this time in our life? What got you to write it? When I read the book, and we're going to talk about more, but what jump-started this whole thing?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Jody. And in fact, I had this book idea when I was 35. And the book was going to be called The Real Girl's Guide to Over 35, because at that point I was, you know, a mom with two young sons then at a career pivot point. You know, I saw a trajectory in my career where I could achieve, you know, higher levels of executive positions. I was struggling with choosing that over being the kind of mom and quite honestly, wife I thought I needed to be. My body was changing, my hormones were changing, and I was looking around and everybody seemed to have everything together but me. Oh, wow. And I felt alone and lost. And so I started writing chapter outlines. I had notes, I had post-its, I had questions, and I sort of knew the structure that I wanted. And that folder, it is a red folder, literally and figuratively got buried. And so fast forward to December of 24, I retired from my 30-year marketing career, pivoted toward consulting, and I was cleaning off my desk and I found the folder. Oh. And I opened the folder and I thought to myself, you know, a lot of the topics and questions and confusion that I felt then, I still felt now, plus a whole host of new things. And that's really what prompted me to write the book. And, you know, I kind of had to ask myself the question, you know, can I write it? Should I write it? All the self-doubt kind of crept in. So in April of 25, I decided, why not? Why not write this book? And that's what I set out to do.
That's great. You know, it's amazing how the universe is synchronous, isn't it?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Maybe you weren't ready at 35. Maybe it was you were still on that career path like a lot of us at midlife think we should still be productive, we should still be taking care of everyone.
Mm.
And then you found it, and then you wrote the book, which is amazing.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that I recognized was, you know, kind of looking back at that time and certainly now, you know, there were so many things that happened to me then and over the course of the 20 years that, you know, in between me starting this idea and then picking it back up, where, you know, there was still not a lot of conversation, or the conversations were just kind of starting with, with regards to hormones and changes in appearance and body and relationships. And, for me, my status as a mom, and yet, my own mom, I'm 19 years younger than my mom. We just didn't have a lot of these conversations. And again, I found myself looking around my group of girlfriends, thinking everybody just looks so together. So it's got to be me. I
Oh.
must be crazy. And I think the other thing that shifted in the course of this 20 years, so timing is everything. I think I needed to be ready, and I had a lot of life that I lived in that 2-decade period. But also, social media has a big role to play in the fact that conversations are starting, right? And I love it. And you're able to connect with other women, experts, people who have a point of view on a lot of these things that we're struggling with that 20 years ago we just didn't have. So it was
Exactly.
also very fortuitous in that regard. And it honestly, the thing that it made me feel was I was not the only one.
That's
I was
great.
not the only one. And
Yeah.
that was so comforting in so many ways. Because honestly, there were times where I was looking around going, it has got to be me.
Yeah. I know. And it's so hard. And in your book, there's attitude, there's manifesto, there's loving yourself, there's how can we make our appearance look better? There's everything, but when your body starts changing and you may get, focus, concentration may be difficult, you get exhausted, it's really hard to figure out what is going on. You're like, am I recovering from a flu? What's going on? Your body changes so much. And it is amazing about how that happens. First of all, I want to start off with a little part in your book, attitude, because this is the first part of saying, I want to start taking care of myself. I don't care anymore. But you say from the moment we're old enough to hold a doll or to pour juice for someone else, we're taught that our value lives in service. We're socialized to be the glue, the cheerleader, the one who remembers birthdays, books, the pediatrician, and makes peace over the Thanksgiving table. And God forbid we drop the ball or gasp or say no. And, that's, I think, for me and for my girlfriends and the conversations that we have is the biggest stumbling block is that socialization, watching our moms do this, feeling like if we do say no, we're going to be rejected. But then that's a deeper thought. Can you speak a little more to that?
I can. So I'll start with saying, the signs that you sort of reach this point of exhaustion, right? With this attitude and, this behavior that whether it's been modeled for us, in my situation, it was a little bit of modeling, but also it was me internalizing a lot of stories that other people said about me and that I began to write about myself. But what I noticed was there were very subtle signs, especially now looking back, if I look back to my 30s and my 40s, of things changing, right? I started to feel like my life didn't feel like mine. I didn't recognize myself in a lot of ways. I didn't recognize how I was showing up at work, how I was showing up in my marriage, how I was showing up to the situations around me, because I let all of these internal stories that I wrote, these monologues played out in my head. I let how other people viewed me define how I was showing up in my own life. And really, to me, and with so many other women that I talked to for the book, as well as experts that I interviewed for the book, it was as if I lost the very best parts of me that made me me. And again, I wish I could say it was this big light bulb moment. It wasn't. It was just an insidious sort of vibe. And a chain of events, that I started to feel this way. And it was really about unlearning decades of expectations that I absorbed or I put on myself about beauty, motherhood, partnership, being the good woman, being the good girl, being the quiet one, being the one that kept the peace, being the one that people could depend on. And, I think that there are these beliefs that we as women carry. For me, and again, women that I talk to for the book, these beliefs are rooted in the concepts of things like you're not enough as you are.
Yes.
That saying no requires an essay because I'll be rejected or I'll be ridiculed or I, you know, I need to explain why it is I don't want to do something, and that our existence is for the benefit of making others comfortable. And these beliefs, they
Interesting.
show up in different ways for different women. And for me personally, they showed up in different ways. But if I boil it all down, they're kind of rooted in these concepts. I wasn't enough as I was. I couldn't say no. And if I did, I had to write a dissertation because no, for a long time, for decades, wasn't a complete
Well, you
sentence.
were clearly uncomfortable
Yeah.
saying no, and you had to defend just
Yes.
a simple no. And if you really think about it, flip roles. What if your partner, boyfriend, husband, you said, honey, do you mind if you blah, 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 do this, take out the trash or fix the window that's broken? And he said, no. That's all he's gonna say.
That's all he's going to say.
Yeah.
But for me, it was like this. I had to justify it and rationalize it. And that, I began to feel that my existence was purely to the benefit of everyone around me. Like my sole job was to make everybody else comfortable.
Wow.
How ridiculous is that?
And
How
exhausting.
exhausting. How
Right.
exhausting.
I mean, you're doing a very high level job. You've got three boys, not easy boys,
No.
and a husband again who you eventually do divorce. Of course, you're gonna feel that way. Now,
No,
what
you're
was,
exactly right. And then just like, let's remember the backdrop of all of this too, for me in my 30s and 40s was I was starting the perimenopause journey. That word didn't exist. That was not a word when I was in my mid 30s, I even knew. It surfaced for me because I was trying to have a third baby, not getting pregnant, and I knew my cycles were changing. And then you fast forward to this period of time where I'm divorcing. Hi, that's a change, trying to keep my boys settled. And then my hormones were out of control. Like, and I didn't even know what was happening to me. And honestly, I felt like I am losing my mind.
I know. I work in the medical profession, the holistic medical profession, as acupuncturist, herbalist, holistic coach. And I feel for you because you just don't know what's going on. Your moods change. Everything's very odd. And it's just you don't get any help because I love in your book, you get medically gaslit. Now tell me what that is. And that's more with, I'm going to say more with a Western medical doctor. What is medical gaslighting?
I think each of us, in one way, shape, or form, has likely experienced some form of this through the course of our lives, right? For some women, it looked like, especially the women that I spoke to in my book, as well as the experts, it could be as simple as I'm in my early 40s. I'm starting to feel symptoms of hormonal changes. I go see my doctor. My doctor immediately looks at me and says, "Hey, I think you need Prozac."
Yeah, the most
Okay, that's a problem,
common prescription
right?
for perimenopausal women,
Yeah.
right? Let's make you nicer.
Let's just
Let's, yeah,
make you less you and make you softer.
exactly. We don't want to hear that,
No.
that you're having a problem or that life is challenging. We
No.
just want everyone around you to feel better, which is exactly
Exactly.
what you were doing.
Well, and so it shows up like that. For me personally, it showed up in a variety of points during my own kind of sort of, very long run up from perimenopause and the first sy symptoms to even today. And the way it showed up for me most recently was I went to a doctor. I was complaining of new symptoms that I believe are menopause related, postmenopause related. And I got the shoulder shrug, the sympathetic nod, like, oh, yeah, that really sucks.
Oh
It's like, that is
no.
insufficient. I do not need to feel as bad as I feel. So, medical gaslighting is this idea that we are patients. We are coming to doctors and our practitioners explaining symptoms, describing problems, and we are either ignored we're placated, or we're being thrown solutions that have nothing to do with what is actually happening. And so it becomes a responsibility for us to then educate ourselves and to fire our doctors to seek out new solutions. And it was very fortuitous for me personally in writing all of this back in the summer last year, where I had interviewed an expert for the book, and I was again kind of starting to feel this new wave of symptoms, right? So for me, it was legitimately wave three. And it was just, my doctor was just kind of giving me the brush off. And this expert, Chris, said, and I said, what can women do? And the answer was, if you're not getting an answer from your doctor, fire your doctor, find a new one. And I
Love
thought,
it.
well, I got to put my money where my mouth is. That's exactly what I'm going to do. So it is this idea of just being shrugged off, dismissed, ignored completely, and brushed over, and your symptoms and your experience getting minimized.
Exactly. And there are definitely solutions. The challenge for, I think, Western medicine and for male doctors in Western medicine is they just don't know. But if you, again, look at the holistic functional medicine, acupuncture, there is a lot people can do. And for the past, 20 years, I've been working with women, and it is challenging. Your hormones will change. You may have the answer for 5 years, for 3 years, for 1 year. Your body shifts again, and you're like, really? I thought I had this under control.
I get to turn in my card, like at what point do I get to turn in my card and say that I've mastered this?
But I love the attitude of firing your doctor, because you're becoming, again, and I'm going to point back to the book, of who you are. You're becoming somebody who's unapologetic, somebody who just says, well, I'm going to get my needs met, which is really the way you define really a yourself in midlife, hopefully all the time. But you're not going to do it. I don't have to stick by you. I appreciate the energy and time, but I'm going to take care of myself now. And, too often women and moms are conditioned, again, to put everyone first, even a doctor. And as you know, but here's what the difference is now when you get to the point, that point. I'm not doing it anymore.
No,
that
enough.
gives you so much power.
It really does. And I think, again, we kind of talked about this idea of what we've been modeled, to keep the peace, to play small, to shrink, and to not make waves for those in our orbit, right? And I think a lot of those stories are rooted in this idea that somehow our happiness, our health, our well-being need to come last on the list, which is just so wrong. If you say these things out loud, of course they don't make sense. But I know for me and a lot of the women that I spoke with, it's this idea that our happiness, our pleasure need to come last on the list. That was kind of a common thread that I saw emerge from not only the women that I spoke to, but also the psychologists, the coaches, the counselors, the doctors. And we almost get to this point where we have to reclaim and sort of claim the fact that now is the time. And a lot of us, and I know me included, I spent a lot of my decades waiting for the perfect plan. Like I had to have everything kind of perfectly lined up.
No control there.
No control issues there. Instead of just looking at things and going, you know what? My perfect plan is just to start. It's to do something different today. And even, if I roll the clock back to last July when I was sitting with this expert and she says, fire your doctor, I had to stop and think like, and I almost had to write myself a script for what I was going to say to my doctor. And once it's like I had an out-of-body experience. I saw myself doing it. I curled up the paper, I threw it in the trash. I called her and said, I'm done. I need you to send these records to a new
Great,
physician. I'm
great.
going to take matters into my own hands. I didn't owe her a
Fabulous.
reason. I didn't justify it. I was just done. And I did not want to spend the next, hopefully, few decades of my life feeling as crappy as I had been.
And it sounds like you felt good after that
Mm.
experience. You felt like, this is who I am. This is my truth. This
That's
is what I
right.
need to do. I can impart some facts or not, but this is what I need. I need my records as soon as possible.
Because my happiness, my health, my pleasure, my satisfaction with my own life comes before anything else.
Yay. And I'm going to read a quote. Again, now in my 50s, I have no tolerance for anything less than the truth, intention, and self-respect. I don't have space for people who drain me, try to silence or diminish me, or pretend to love me while treating me like an afterthought. And I can imagine if all women at any age, but especially midlife, because let's face it, we don't have the energy, we don't have the tolerance. We have to live that truth. And if we do, we would be a lot happier. I mean, much happier. Now, I know another point in the book, which is great, and there were so many great points. You
Oh,
got to
thank
run
you.
out and get this book.
Thank you.
Is pleasure. And you talk about midlife sex. And you also say, because it's changed, I'm going to read again from it, your body is asking for care, new turn-ons, a redefinition of what pleasure means. Explore with yourself or a partner if they're willing. Figure out your new normal, ditch the scripts, use your lube, and I love it. And penetration isn't the gold standard. It never was.
It never
I had
was.
to
And
make sure of it.
if I look back at that, if I go back to my 20s and my 30s and my 40s, this idea that somehow my existence was to serve and make other people comfortable, it didn't start and stop in the bedroom, to be honest with you, right? And I didn't really discover what I liked, what I needed until I was in my 40s, because it just never occurred to me, which is such, again, you say these things out loud
No,
and it's,
we've
I,
all been
yeah,
socialized.
yeah.
So
It just never
we,
occurred to me
yeah, exactly.
that I could take the time to explore what I deemed as pleasurable, what I needed, what I enjoyed. I felt as if that energy was supposed to be applied to somebody else, to a different situation, to a different standard. And that was totally wiped away when I hit my 40s. You're divorced, kind of had to figure some stuff out. And I learned a lot about myself. And it also was rooted in this idea that, I was like a lot of women, kind of critical of my body and the changes and all these other things. But man, this body has seen me through a lot. And she's really good. She's really strong. She's nourished, three boys, sustained their lives for, 6 years if I add it all up. She walked herself into a mediator's office when she decided that it was time to divorce. She sat in boardroom. She did all the hard things. She deserves a little pleasure.
A lot of pleasure,
Right?
as much as you can take in.
As much as you can take in. And if and one of the things that prompted me to fire my doctor was the fact that I noticed my libido was changing. And I
Interesting.
couldn't put words to it. I had no language until I read a fictional book that explained what was happening to me. And then I finally went to my doctor. I said, and she's and her answer when I said, "Hey, my libido is changing," she said, "Maybe you and your partner need to go on more dates." And that was like, I've been coming to you for 25 years. My man lives in Australia, so that's your solution. Like somehow I am now responsible for not having enough date nights. And that's going to solve my pleasure issue? No thanks, and but that's what I was and like we're talking 6, 8 months ago, that's what I was told. Go on more dates.
That's amazing. I was thinking, oh, this is maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but
it was last July when I went to this doctor's
wow,
office, my same doctor,
just
because I had a list of things that I noticed were changing. My bladder was changing. Every orifice in my body is dry. I'm constantly like rubbing my nose. I had stopped my period at 47, so I really assumed that I was turning in my card, right? And then I these new waves have come. I noticed my hair was changing, and my libido was changing. And the answer I got was, wow, you know, that really sucks. I know. It's really
Yeah.
hard. And go on more dates with your
Oh,
partner.
gosh. And it is so easy. Not easy, because hormones are complicated. They're different for every person. Everybody has a different reaction. Again, libido dropping is more common than not. But if you regulate the hormones, the HRTs that you're given, it can be great. And
Absolutely.
yeah, hair and skin and
And that's
lining.
the thing, right, Jody? Like, we deserve pleasure.
Yeah.
We deserve it, and not having it, whether that comes in the form of, hey, my skin is changing, hey, my hair is changing, hey, my desire for sex is changing. If that is not the way you want to live your life, you deserve better.
Absolutely.
And that's a mindset
Absolutely.
shift. And then with that mindset set shift comes the behavior. And those very small steps, I'm going to call a new doctor. I'm going to go buy a vibrator. I'm going to change, like, whatever it is. But the solution cannot be, wow,
No, I
that,
know.
yeah, that,
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And
Yeah.
also go on more dates. Like,
And
come on.
the attitude changes. So again,
Totally.
if if we listen to the words I read earlier about truth, it opens up a whole new conversation
It does. And it
with
starts with
your
yourself.
partner.
With
Oh,
yourself,
it
and then
does.
yes.
Yes, but the behavior then is, I want pleasure. I deserve pleasure. I'm not gonna settle again for less, or I'm not going to be whoever my partner wants me to be to get his pleasure. I'm going to speak up, and it's a great attitude. And it once again, all these steps give us power. And I'm going to turn next to money. Money in midlife versus money that you got, and again, you were single momming it for a while and producing, feeling like you had to overwork, and identifying closely. You say your value is not your paycheck at midlife. What does that mean, and what does money do for us overall at midlife?
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting is a lot of us, and for very good reasons, have a very unique relationship with money, right? Mine was always that I needed it in order to take care of myself. And so I almost had a little bit of a scarcity mindset, and I almost feared not having enough. And I also always felt that money was going to be the protective layer to help ensure that when the other shoe dropped, that proverbial other shoe, whether it was in my job, in my marriage, with our home, you know, whatever it was, that I was going to be prepared and ready. So I sort of used it as a little bit of an armor. It was a protective armor for myself. And then I somehow also told myself the story that that was its primary job. So I didn't actually really derive a lot of pleasure from money because it was so busy protecting
Yeah,
me from the
right.
inevitable, you know, crap hitting the fan. And so I realized, you know, divorcing has a way of, you know, making you see things through a different lens. And some of us will divorce. Maybe we'll go through a job change. We'll go through a health scare. I mean, there's so many reasons that trigger a sort of re-examination of our relationship with money, and then having to put it in the context of what we want it to be. And that's really what changed for me. So it became less of a source of scarcity, and its primary job being to protect me, to, you know, I get to earn it, and I also get to derive pleasure from it. And so I write about a situation where, you know, I had enough of it, and I went to go buy myself a car, and it was not a practical car. It was not.
Well
It was a fancy girl car, and I
then.
was, you know, I paid for the car. I came in, and I was mentally prepared for the next morning where I walked into the garage, and I was gonna, you know, and I was playing the scene out in my head. Okay, you're gonna go into the garage. This overwhelming sense of guilt and remorse is gonna flood you. You know you can't return the car, so what are you gonna do? And I opened the garage door. I took one look at the car, and I'm like, turns out I don't feel remorseful, and I deserve this car. And I shut the door, and that was the end of it. And so
You
for
did
me, it
it.
was this reframing of,
Yeah.
you know, I had it do such a big job, and I had to reestablish a relationship with it. And instead of it being this armor, I needed it to be a source of pleasure and confidence for me, and pride in the fact that I earned it.
And
And
you did
yeah,
for years.
for decades.
Years you
For
did.
decades I did that. And what changed for me too was in late 24, my partner sold his business and offered me the gift of retirement. And that was
Oh.
a very hard pill to swallow too, because for the first time in my head, I was going to be dependent on somebody else. And I had to reframe that story, which was, hey, I am not dependent on him. We built a life that was almost a decade long on each of us bringing something to that relationship. And for the first several years, I brought things, he brought things, and now we're just entering a phase where we're each bringing different things. So that framing was totally different.
That's great. I love how the shoe dropped, all right, as it always will. But
Always
then
will.
you were like, all right, what story am I telling myself? What can I let go of?
Yep.
And what do I need? What will make me happy? And you were able to really walk that path. And your manifesto, which is the one of the last chapters in the book that you write yourself, is so wonderful. Again, it's worth getting the book just to write your own manifesto of your midlife real girl's life guide. And before we end this conversation, Angela, how can people get a hold of the book, contact you? Yes.
Yes. So first of all, thank you so much. That manifesto is super powerful.
Yes.
It was really powerful for me, and I'm so glad that it resonated with you. Right now, my book is on Amazon. You can find it, Real Girl's Guide to Midlife. I have a website, realgirlsguide.com. You can buy the book on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, bookshop.org, all the places where you like to buy books. We have a paperback and a Kindle version.
Yeah.
And I also write a Substack, which was really fun. So I started that about 2 months after I started writing the book. And it was really just a little experiment for me, as a way to sort of test my writing and just sort of see if any of the topics were resonating. And you can find that at realgirlsguidetomidlife.com.
Great. And your Substack is priceless. There's
Oh, thank
one
you.
I've been, I loved it. There's one that says, I am no longer calling myself, I'm paraphrasing,
Yes.
low maintenance.
Oh, I did. Yes.
I'm no longer accepting that I'm low maintenance. I want the salad in my way. And it's like, get that with, but if that says,
I wore this idea of being low
yeah.
maintenance as some kind of badge of honor. And it's
Oh,
like, no,
yeah.
if I want to
Yeah.
order my salad with 17 modifications, I'm
Yeah.
going to order it with 17 modifications
Exactly. Oh,
because I want
I
to,
get that all the time. People look at me, whoever I'm with,
Yeah.
really? And I said, really? Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
I'm eating it. I want it this way. But
Exactly.
that was priceless. You had
Oh.
me perfectly there. Well,
Thank you.
Angela, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And it's really, your book is so empowering.
Thank you.
People of all ages, but especially when things start to change and you want to, as mentioned in your book, become a badass in
Correct.
midlife when you don't want to be small, you don't want to
Nope.
have to get along
Nope.
and serve everyone else. It's so great.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I would love to come back. This was such a fun chat, and
Oh, yay. Yeah, that will be great. All right, well, I'd love to have you back and you take care, okay?
thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm so grateful that you've listened to the end of this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review it, and share it with your friends. I love teaching insights so that you can have a more impactful and meaningful life. It's my mission to build a thriving community of happy, fulfilled people. Want more? visit my website at yourspectacularlife.com.